Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. Today, we visit another small town in Louisiana that is known for its great food and has seen some challenges in the last few decades as a result of social changes. And we talked to a mayor who was born and raised there, tried to move on to the big city, but was literally called back to serve her hometown in a very historic way. We're going to go talk with Mayor Jennifer Vadrine in the small town of Ville Platte, Louisiana. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is sponsored by the Greater Harrelson Chamber of Commerce. When looking around for your next small town adventure, you should consider Harrelson County, Georgia. With four small towns, each with their own unique character, Harrelson County has all the charm and warmth of a rural community. Located just 1 hour from the heart of Atlanta, Harrelson County also offers access to the amenities of the big city. In Harrelson County, Georgia, you can enjoy taking a brisk walk among historic homes, eating lunch at one-of-a-kind restaurants, shopping for unique products lovingly curated by one of many local entrepreneurs, and the recreational opportunities are endless, including leisurely floats down the Tallapoosa River and attending some of the many outdoor festivals. Make plans to visit Harrelson County, Georgia today, and you just may decide to stay. For more information, visit harrelson.org. That's HARALSON.org. Harrelson County. You're a one-hour drive to a nonstop flight to anywhere in the world, but once you're here, you might not want to go anywhere else. I'm in city council chambers off the side of a very busy lobby. So if you hear some background noise, that's because this place is a-buzzing with activity. I'm in the city. I confirmed it was a city, not a town, of Ville Platte, Louisiana. I am sitting with the mayor of Ville Platte, Louisiana, Mayor Jennifer Vadrine. So Mayor Vadrine, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Welcome to Ville Platte, Mayor Matt. I'm so happy that you're here and you're home now. You got a new home. So anytime you need another home, you are home.
I'm already ready. The two times we've met at LMA events, you always make sure to talk about Ville Platte has the best food in all of Louisiana.
That's correct.
And so I can't wait for lunch.
We have the best food in the world, and we have the friendliest people in the world. In fact, you're going to meet Jack Miller barbecue sauce.
That's right.
You told best me we're going to go meet. Best barbecue sauce in the world. Barbecue sauce so good, you don't need the barbecue. Just slap it on a slice of bread, you're good. Just the sauce.
That's a lower calorie way to do it, right? If you don't put the meat on there, you
that's
don't.
That's right. That's our story, and we'll stick to it.
But we're still going to have the meat when we have the sauce. You just don't have to.
You just don't have to. You might not have meat around, and you just need a sandwich. You just slap that on one slice of bread, and you fold it over.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Now we're doing low carb because it's just one slice. Look at you. This is a healthy place, isn't it?
Oh, well.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be a very fun interview.
Well.
We have so much to talk about, but I'll start with the same place I start with every interview and ask you, were you born in Ville Platte, Louisiana?
Absolutely. I was born, and as we say here, we don't say reared. I was born and raised here.
Okay.
All my life. Absolutely. It's home.
I told you, now, sometimes someone's born somewhere else, hadn't even heard of the town they're now the mayor of, and we go talk that journey. But since you were born here, talk about life growing up in Ville Platte, what
life
it was like.
Growing up here was wonderful. The community life, everyone knew each other, all of the neighbors, they looked out for each other. Of course, it was a whole different world where discipline was a major factor back then. Now, in my house, I was either at school or at church. If I wasn't at school, I was at church. If I was at church, I was at school. It was either church or school, one of the two. And maybe every now and then.
So it's easy to find you. If you weren't at one, you were the other.
And it's interestingly you would say that. It's easy to find me because one of my grandmother's saying was, and my mom too, was like, I want to be able to put my hand on you. So when you say you were going somewhere, you better go that place.
Yep.
Because I want to be able to put my hand on you. And everybody in the community would know if you had was walking and you crossed the corner, that lady on the corner or that guy on the corner were like, hey, where you going? Going across the street to my aunt's house. All right, go ahead.
And just checking in. Everybody's holding you accountable.
And look, half hour later, I'm coming back that same direction. Hey, where you going? I'm going back home. All right, go ahead. I'm serious. They looked out for you because, you know, back then, whatever street you lived on, you couldn't go past that corner.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you are out of the eyesight of your parents.
Oh,
understand?
Okay. Okay.
So when you crossed the corner, somebody knew you were going somewhere you weren't supposed to, or you had permission.
If you were crossing the street, they wanted to check to make sure
it was okay. That's right. Then they'll give you the okay. Now, if they say go back, you go back.
You better go back.
Because they're going to call home. Somebody's going to know. But that was one of the great things about they cared. Everybody cared about each other. You know, and back then in my generation, you could still whip your kids. And when I say whip, I need to clarify that. I'm not talking about brutal beatings or anything.
Right.
But you could still whip your children for disciplinary reasons, you know. And believe me, I caught my share.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I caught a whipping every day of the week except Saturday because they were getting their heart ready for Sunday. So they wanted to mess up their heart for Sunday. And you definitely wouldn't get a whipping on Sundays, but come Monday morning, you had to pay for it.
So they would kind of keep track of everything.
Yeah.
So Monday was the worst day for you.
Exactly.
Anything you did
exactly.
Saturday, Sunday.
And then, you know, back there, I see today when I see kids and they talking back to their mothers or grandmothers, I get the chills. Because you see, back then you did not talk back. I mean, if they said it was Saturday and it was Sunday, it was Saturday. Understand? You didn't correct then. You know, because now you could take a chance and talk back to your mom and your dad. You could take that chance. You might come out crippled, handicapped, or something like that. But go ahead. But the one person, and that was written in the Bible, from the womb to the tomb, you knew you do not talk back to your grandmother. Grandmother superseded everybody in the family. Everybody. And so I think I was about 10 years old, man. I lost my head. I lost my mind that day because I knew you don't talk back to your grandmother. So that day, I talked back to my grandmother. Lord have mercy. When I knew it, I just said, Lord, I'm on my way. Because I know she's going to kill me. I'm on my way. Thank you for these little 10 years of life. I'm good.
I can't help but ask, do you happen to remember what was so important that you decided on that day to talk back to your grandmother?
Well, I wanted to go somewhere, and she said no. And I said, well, no, but I still need to go. I'm going. Mm. That lady head turned like the Exorcist. Remember how the Exorcist went all the way around? That's when I'm like, I'm gone. But that day, I guess God said, I was praying so hard because I knew she's going to kill me. I really did. And he said, Lord, I better help this child. I think she's going to need double help. So he said grace and mercy, you know, to help me. And I guess he said, let me help her because one day she might grow up to be something, you know. So that day, my grandmother talked. She knew that she wouldn't talk. She'd just whip you, you know. But she said, one day, your mouth, you're going to help a lot of people. One day, your mouth will be the voice for the voiceless. One day, you're going to talk to multitudes of people. But today, you're going to get your butt whipped. That is true story. Until today, out of all the whippings I caught, I remember that one.
That one the most.
Yes, Lord.
Well, you survived.
That was my near-death experience.
You survived that. You survived all the people checking on you when you tried to cross the street.
Yes.
Now, is there just one high school in the parish? There's City High School?
Public high school. Well, back then, we had a black high school, James Stephen High School. That was the black high school where all the black people went. And then there was Ville Platte High School. It was all the white students went there. And then we had Sacred Heart. That's the Catholic school in the city. So there were three schools back then. When I was in the seventh grade, that's when fifth grade, integration. Integration started. We were still in the fifth grade. The white kids had was on to the black school. And I remember only a lot of the white kids, that one white student came to meet us at James Stephens. And his name was David Elliott, my classmate, same grade. I talked to him the other day. He was the only one. And I was asking him, how did that feel? You know, and he was scared. He said, I was scared. He said, but y'all welcomed me.
Yeah.
So much. You know, y'all dispelled all the racial things that we had been hearing about black people in black school. And he said, I was comfortable. And David Elliott was with us from fifth grade to senior
year. So when they integrated, he was the only one that came to
that school? He was the only one that came. The other white students, they built a new school called Evangeline Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So they would not have to come to the black school. They built their own school.
Mm. And now, is that public school or private?
For them, it was private.
So that was the Catholic school, and then it was a separate private school.
That's correct. And it lasted for a few years, and you still have some graduates from that school. But eventually, more and more came. And you know, I was raised in a house, we didn't even look at color. I was all, you know, taught, you don't hate anybody, no matter what the color of their skin. So it didn't bother me whatsoever. And I was always asking the question, you don't like them because they're black, just because we're black?
Mm-hmm.
Or why you don't like them simply because they're white? That's not a reason not to like anybody. Get to know them, know their character, know their heart. That's how I base my conclusion about people.
I know this is kind of putting you on the spot, but I know race and some of the racial tensions and being first and kind of breaking through is part of your story.
Right.
We've already talked about what's on the wall behind you as far as the pictures of the mayors, and there's one that looks very different from all the other, and it's you on the end here.
Yeah.
Do you know roughly around the time what the population difference is, black to white at the time, and or maybe with your graduating class? Because by then, some things had progressed. The first person was the hardest person, and once that happened, and once people got to know each other...
Right.
I'm not going to say, and I know, the tensions were still there, because they're still there today.
Yeah.
But it gets a little less with every passing year as people get to know each other as people instead of just aspect of your
Are. It got so much better. You know, we got to be friends. And this week is homecoming. And we got some of these, you know, I graduated with 45, 46 years ago. We're friends all the way through. Yeah. We still keep in touch, white and black. So it got really better. The population of Ville Platte back then was larger.
We know the breakdown as far as percentage white.
Mm-hmm. It was majority white back then. But then we had white flight, where the white people moved out of the city limits into subdivisions outside of the city limits.
So unincorporated parish.
Yes, that's correct.
This is Evangeline Parish?
This is Evangeline Parish, okay. Correct. So when the population decreased, of course, the tax base decreased. And that's when you saw the dwindling down of the city.
Yeah.
When that tax base was no longer there. And back then, there wasn't a lot of federal help for infrastructure and so forth and so on. So graduated from Ville Platte High School, go Bulldogs. Bulldogs. I still love the Bulldogs. We still homecoming every year. But all in all, it was a good place to be. I didn't have any problems, but I felt that it was also my responsibility to make sure that no one else had problems. Mm-hmm. And that's the black students and the white students. I didn't want the black students to be treated differently by the white teachers. I didn't want the white students to be treated any different by the black teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, let's all come together. And you don't dislike anybody simply because of their skin. You just don't do that. So we went through high school, ninth grade, 10th grade, 11th grade. Again, you had black and white. They were kind enough to elect me, the black and white population, a homecoming queen.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And that was good, not so much for the title, but you saw that they didn't look at the color of my skin, because we had a lot of whites that were voting and we had a lot of blacks that were voting. So that gave me some real hope that things will get better and better by and by.
So what did you do after you graduated? Homecoming queen. Graduated high school. What did you do then?
After that, I went to LSU.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Indeed. Had a great time. Again, racial tensions were there. Remember, and back then, had about 25,000 white kids, and we were 400 blacks then. We looked like a fly in a bowl of milk. But we had a great time. We didn't have any problems. And I think, and one guy, Collis Temple Jr., Collis Temple Knight was the first black basketball player for LSU. And after he had played, and Collis came back to campus and looked after the black kids because he didn't want us to go through what he went through.
Yeah.
When he played, they spat on him. They called him the N-word, all of this kind of things. While he's still playing ball and winning
right.
games. But he wanted to make sure. And Collis was from a small, was from Kentwood, Louisiana. He was from a small town, too, and most of us that were there were from small towns. Ville Platte, Franklin, blah, blah, blah. And so he came and he looked after us. Some of us, he walked us to class. So the teachers would know, hey, Collis Temple is looking after us. And he would always come back and check, y'all okay? Y'all going through any problems? But personally, I didn't have any problems with any of the teachers, any of the students. I had a great experience.
And you loved the big city.
From Ville Platte to Baton Rouge.
Now, what did you end up, what did you get a degree in?
I got a degree in psychology.
Okay.
And then after that, I got a degree in public administration.
Okay. Also at LSU, or did you get some?
From the Nelson Mandela School at Southern University.
Okay.
And then
so
also,
still in Baton Rouge.
Yes, I'm still in Baton Rouge. And between and betwixt, I did some international studies at Oxford, in Oxford, England.
Okay.
That was a great experience. Then came back, I went to the John F. Kennedy School at Harvard. That was great. Again, studying public administration. And then I started PhD work at the Nelson Mandela in public policy and administration. I did PhD work. And the only thing I have left to do is I was getting ready to write my dissertation. Boom. Here come the mayoral thing. Now, you have to understand, being mayor was never on my bucket list.
Well, let me ask you this, because I feel like you went to a lot of places, international
yeah.
for school. Was that just like straight from one school to the next
yeah.
school? Or did you do some career work in
that
between?
That was some career work, and I always
wondered, so where did you do that? Did you end up coming back to Ville
Platte?
Coming
back to Ville Platte.
Okay, so you graduated LSU with psychology,
right?
And did you...
Came back to Ville Platte.
And then you came back to Ville Platte
yes.
before you went back and did your
That's
master's
right.
study.
Yes,
okay.
I came back and started working at... I left for a week. Went to Dallas because I was going to the big city, you know. And there was a position that came open at the Community Action Agency. For those who don't know, Community Action is the hub of social services for low-income, disabled population. And everybody in Ville Platte called for me to come back to this job. The preachers, the lawyers, the teachers. And I said, no, I'm not coming back.
So I was actually going to ask that question at some point in this. You went off to the big city, went
yeah.
off to Baton Rouge, and you thought, I'm not going back to that small town again.
I said, I wasn't going back to Ville Platte. I never, ever referred. I said, I'm not going back. I'm going, because all my friends had gone. Everybody
right.
was in Dallas, New York,
yeah.
Los Angeles.
Went off to the big,
yeah.
big cities.
So I said, I'm going. Okay, so they said, okay, we'll let you try. Packed up the car. I was in Dallas a week. After I told everybody else, no, I'm not coming back. Because this is the way Ville Platte. They want something, they make everybody call you. You know, the teacher, the preacher, everybody. They make
Everyone's
everybody.
On the recruiting
The district
team,
attorney
yeah.
called, the sheriff, everybody called. He said, they got this position that we know we need you. But they knew one man I could not say no to, and that was Pop. So when they called, my roommate at the time answered the phone. She said, Pop is on the phone. I'm going to help you pack.
Before she handed you the phone.
Yeah, and he just said, come back and try it for 1 year. If you don't like it, you can go back. And he said, it's helping the poor people. And I could never tell Pop no. You know, Pop would tell me to run into his brick wall, I'd do it. So I did. That's what brought me back to Community Action. I was there 30 years. That
wow.
1 year turned into 30 years.
So at the end of the one, you decided to stay another 29?
You think? But it was like every time I wanted to leave or had an inkling, another grant would come through or another program would come available that could help the poor people, that could help the disabled, that could help the veterans, that could help the children.
Mm-hmm.
And it went on and on. And I look back, I'm like, I've been here 30 years.
Mm.
Then that's when a group of people came. Again, running for office was not on my bucket list. In fact, when I was at Harvard, one of my professors, he said, you're going to run for office one day. Oh, no, 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 no. Not me, because I'm running my mouth in class again.
Yep.
He said, I'm telling you, you're going to run. No, I'm not. He said, just do this. When you run and when you win, you just promise to give me a call.
Yep. Let me know that I was right.
I said, just don't wait by the phone because I'm not right. Because I knew the politics. Because
right.
I had politicians all in and out of my house all the time. And I couldn't talk out of both sides of my mouth. I didn't want to just talk with people wanted to hear. I wanted to be able to tell. And that's the way I was, tell them the truth. But anyway, a group of people came to me after my 30 years. They begged me to run for mayor. And I'm like, no, no. They thought they were going to get an answer right away that I was going to say yes. And I'm like, no, let me do this. I said, I have to pray on this. That was my exact words. They came to me in April. Yeah, I said, I have to pray on this. Because I knew Ville Platte was in the ditch by then. Because, again, we had that white flight. Population had gone down. Tax base had gone down. I mean, we were really in the ditch. I prayed for 3 months. I gave God all kinds of excuses. Oh, we can't do this. We won't be able to do this, Lord, blah, blah, blah. And
around what time frame was this? What
in
year?
April.
But
this
was
in 2010.
Okay.
2010. And so one night after I'd given all the excuses and he talked to me, and I remembered it was June 14th that night. I was still on my knees saying my prayers, asking God to guide me with a decision. He said, I'll be with you. And I announced June 15th that morning.
And decided to run for mayor.
And I decided to run for mayor.
Was it an open race or did you have to run against an incumbent?
I ran against an incumbent
mm-hmm.
and another white male. The incumbent was a white man and then there was another white man.
Okay.
So I had two,
it's a three-way
two white
race.
Incumbents. Yes.
And as I already alluded to this before, the wall behind you says, "In God We Trust," in large letters.
And I put that up there.
And it's the pictures of all the mayors of Ville Platte going back, I don't know how many years, but that's
it goes back to Jesus.
Over a dozen for sure. And all of them, I don't have a problem with white males. I am one. But all of them, all the pictures are white men except for the one in the end, the most recent one, and that's you.
Yeah.
So talk about what that was like during the campaign, because I know
mm-hmm.
from just being aware and talking to people that that's a big deal.
Yes.
I also know that creates resistance in a community, even if things had gotten better since the first year of integration
right.
in the schools.
Right.
It doesn't mean that everything's just gone away and everyone does just look through color
right.
and see person.
Right.
So what was that like for during that campaign? And obviously, that's the year you won, right?
Right.
And so now, did you need a runoff? You had three people in a race. So you won without a runoff.
I've never been in a runoff.
One of the folks was the
right.
incumbent mayor. Just describe some of that aspect of it, because
yeah,
I know that's a big deal.
That was very interesting and invigorating, because what I did was I walked every street in the city of Ville Platte, 182 streets.
And you mentioned the population's kind of gone down, but what's the current population of Ville Platte?
Right now, we're about 8,000.
Mm-hmm. What were you before?
Well, no, when I ran, we were about at 8,000.
Okay.
Before, we were like 15 to 18,000.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so it has dwindled a lot. It had went down.
And it may have stayed roughly the same in the parish, but you said the parish, unincorporated parish, grew in population.
The parish grew, but the city didn't.
Okay.
And, you know, walking the streets and talking to people, just... That's why I'm a firm believer. Like, you just got to sit down and talk to people. And I did. I said, walking 182 streets in July and August in Ville Platte. That was the best diet I've ever did. I think I was like 40 pounds. But there was one guy who came up to me, one white guy, 80 years old, came to the campaign headquarters. And he said, Miss Jennifer, I never vote for nobody black because I just can't, because I don't believe that's the natural order of things. God does not want the black people to be over the white people. That's it. I said, well, come on, Mr. Uncle, let's sit down. Let's talk. I said, it's okay. So we talked and we talked and we talked. And after we talked, he said, you know what? I'm going to vote for you.
Wow.
You will be the first black person I'm going to vote for. He left, went to the courthouse, which was 3 or 4 blocks down. He came back 20 minutes later. He said, I want you to know that I just voted for you. You know, first black person I voted for you. Because sitting down talking with you, I could see that in your face, I could see in your eyes, I can read people. He said that you're a good Christian woman and you're going to be fair to everybody. I said, oh, yes, absolutely. That's the way I was raised. I said, well, Mr. Joe, let me ask you one question. Why is it that you all are so afraid of black people being in office? He said, I'm going to tell you the truth, Miss Jennifer. We scared that y'all going to treat us the way we treated y'all. That was that by the honest, most honest answer he could give. And it was the truth. I said, no, I'm not like that. He said, well, I could see that. And he said, that's why I went to vote for you. And I'm going home. I'm going to get my wife. And I'm going to tell my wife to come and vote for you because you're a good person and you're going to be fair to everybody. So it was instances like that that gave me hope. And then, when the number, you know, and I looked at the election, is that The white population did not look at my color. They looked at Jennifer, and they looked at my heart, and they looked at what I stood for and what I said that I wanted to do for the city. So you can't just, you know, make an umbrella decision about the whites not going to vote for the blacks simply because they're black. It's always about let's sit down, talk, and getting to know her. They knew my family. They knew how I was raised. So that was a plus. You know, I had my grandfather was a mechanic, and I had a mechanic shop, and I had a couple of people tell me it was because of your grandfather that I was able to go to work. And he didn't even charge me. You know, he fixed the car. He knew I didn't have any money. And then sometimes he would let me use his car while he fixed my car. I heard stories like that, and that just touched my heart. And we couldn't pay him. But he never, never made us pay. The only thing he said, and I used to be in the shop all the time with Pop, you know, because if I was with Pop, I wouldn't get in a whipping. You understand?
It was a safety zone.
Yes, you know, and so I knew a lot of them. And he said, you know, this is my time to repay him back by helping you. And stories like that. So, it went back to that community. It went back to the way people were raised. And if they know, even though we were black and whites, we were separate, but white people knew who blacks were. Blacks knew who white people were. There were some good white people. There were some bad white people. There were some good black people. There were some bad white people. And what would Pop, they would always let him. He was the spokesperson. And I saw that coming up. They trusted him immensely. And I'm like, oh, God, that's a responsibility. Because they would come ask him what to do in this situation, what to do in that situation. And they trusted him. And I always wanted to be that kind of person that you could trust. Mm-hmm. That if I gave you my word, you got my word. That's my bond. If I have nothing else, I have a word. This park right outside of City Hall, named after Mr. Artigo, a white man who had a parts shop. And Pop had to go there to get some parts for his mechanic shop. Everybody else went through the back. The owner didn't know that. But that day, the owner was in there, and Pop said, and he'd always have me with him. He'd put me on the counter. No other black child would sit on that counter. And he didn't do anything about it. And then he said, no, that's the last day that a black person will go in the back. And he was that fair. Again, another fair man in unfair times. And Mr. Artigo, and when I became mayor, I named that park after him because he was always, he said, you the little girl that was sitting on the counter with your grandfather? Yes, that's me. And, you know, you never know. Yeah. You never know. But he was really fair, and he didn't let black people go through the back door. And he let them come in his shop. And that's the main reason I wanted to name that downtown park. And I was fortunate enough to name it when he was still alive.
Yeah.
And he was able to see that the park was named after him simply because of what he did. And I witnessed what he did back then.
Yeah.
You never know. What goes around comes around. And you have to be careful on who you treat wrongly and how you treat them. Because you just never, never know. And that was that man cried. And he was so happy that nothing had been named after him. He had a hot sauce, you know, that he made, but no parks. And because he did a lot of contributions for the city of Ville Platte, but to name that park after him was gratifying to me. And it was the right thing to do.
So 2010, you're elected mayor. Do you take office in the same year in Louisiana sometime?
Okay, took office beginning in of 2011. 11.
And so let's talk about what were some of the things you set out to do first. You said there'd been some things. It sounds like there's a wide spectrum of things to work on. So how did you attack it first? And go ahead and take us through, because you said you've run for reelection. You're in your how many terms have you done now?
I'm in my third term.
In your third
running
term.
Running for my fourth.
Okay, running this year. Yep.
Yes.
And so, yeah, let's just take us through some of the things you've tackled and addressed and your proudest accomplishments. But also some of the challenges maybe you feel like you haven't met yet.
Yes, there are both, a lot of both. Well, the first 30 days, the first 2 months, I would say, was the historical months. Because remember, this was an old bank.
Yeah.
And this was a bank at one time black people couldn't even come in the front in the lobby.
Wow.
Yes. So when I walked in that lobby.
So the historic significance of this building.
Yes.
Wow.
Indeed. Yes. And so I had to deal with the black community was so proud. So happy. Now, and then when I walked into the mayor's office, I had to take a moment because I'm the first black, first woman to sit in this chair.
Yeah.
And then I had old black people who were in the 80s and their 90s who I invited to come, not only in City Hall, but to come in the
mayor's
office and sit in my chair. Whew. Ooh, I think about that now. And it made their day. It was a day they thought would never happen. Mm-hmm. They lived to see. I get choked up thinking about it.
And not only did they get to see it, they got to participate.
They got to vote for me. That was that first, that we got to vote for somebody black. And the fact that you won, and now you call us. We had so many prayer meetings in that office.
Was there ever previously a black candidate?
There were two, yes. There was a city councilman, and there was another black woman. There were two black men and one woman that ran before but never was successful.
And they ran for mayor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But they were on council. You mentioned one
That's
was
correct.
Councilman.
But, right. Okay. Two were on the council, one was not on the council. And then it was like, why me? You know? But I, in my inaugural address, I had to thank them because they paved the way.
Right.
They gave it a try, you know? But when the older people came, I mean, this went on for like 2 or 3 months because a lot of them just wanted to be able to walk in here and be, quote unquote, be free to walk in here and say, where's Jennifer? And for me to call them and say, y'all come in the office. That was, they said, like, this is a moment I'll never forget because I never thought it would happen.
Yeah.
And so we went through that for the first couple of months. And then, you know, I looked at my desk and like, whoa, the list was just, this needs to be done, that needs to be done. Not only did it need to be done, we had so many places that had been neglected in the black section for 30 years. Streets never were fixed, never. Now we're fixing and repaving and reconstructing and repairing all of those streets in that neighborhood that had never been fixed, not over 30 years, since the 60s. So those are the things that we're tackling now. We were in the ditch, you know, it was no tax base. It wasn't a lot of money. The ditches was bad. The drainage was bad. Housing was bad. Streets were bad. Everything was bad. So I knew I had a lot of work to do, and I started getting involved and knowing who to call in Baton Rouge, who I need to call. I need some help.
Yeah. Steep learning curve, since you weren't on council before and had not been in municipal government.
No.
It was learned it all from scratch.
I came from community action to city. Never ran for office before. Just came from community action to here. So I was working 18-hour days back then. Because back then and still now, their problems are my problems. I couldn't sleep knowing that somebody had a ditch in front of their house with algae that was so thick that nobody would go and see about. Or the drainage was so bad and we were flooding and the town was going down. It was such a quaint, beautiful place, you know. So all of those things were weighing down on me. But I just like, Lord, just give me strength to press on, to press on. And I asked the community to just be patient with me. I said, y'all, we're going to get it done. We can't do it all at once, but I promise you I will fight till I fall for the people of Ville Platte, because I love his home.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And that's how
you tried to get away, but Pop pulled you back.
Pulled me back. Kept coming back. And then every year we got better and we built up the budget and we came up with surpluses. And one of the challenges, first year, I found out that the policemen were being paid $8 an hour. That almost made me fall down. $8 an hour. So that we tackled that right away. You know, I went up $2. That's all the budget could afford at the time. And again, I had no idea how little that they were being paid. And back then, well, it still is now. Minimum wage was seven. Well, I think back then might have been five. I think, but it's $7.25 now. No employee in this city that works for the city makes $7.25. We did not wait for the state because the state and the nation could never raise it up. So now everybody is $13, $14, $15, $16 an hour. That was one of the things that I needed to change. I needed people to try and make a livable wage. And I never knew, you know, unless you get into government, you don't know how it works. So it's easy to criticize when you're outside looking in. But once I got into it and saw all of those things, I'm like, when you know better, you got to fight to do better. Mm-hmm. And that's why one of the main things was raise the salaries of the policemen, raise the salaries of the city workers, and continually, every year, raise their salaries so they could get to a livable raise. Again, walking the streets when I was campaigning, I made notes, this ditch, this street, drainage is bad here, and came back and got in office. And that's why you see that map on the wall, went street by street. We need to go do this. We need to go do that and tackle them one by one. Because the people needed, I gave the people my word. They needed to know I cared. And I told them, I'm going to send somebody to take care. And they would tell me, nobody been here in 10, 12 years. I'm like, what? you know, again, this is in the low-income black section of town, and that was a low-income white section of town the same way. And I say, I'm taking notes. So when I got in office, those are the first things that I tackled, the things that I'd given the people my word that I would fix. And then we started getting in, money started flowing a little bit. But that's one of the things that angered me. And that's when I joined LMA, too, because money was there. By the time it trickled down to all the big cities, the small cities, we got nothing. We fell through the cracks. That's how my sermon started for fighting for the small municipalities. Because I'm joining LMA, and they're all saying this money is here and this money. Where is it? We're not getting any of it. So you traced it, and you found the big cities got it all. By the time it got to us, it was just nothing left. And thank God I had a degree in public administration. I had grant writing experience. So I started writing the grants myself because I just didn't have any help here. Was no one in place. So started writing the grants myself, going to Baton Rouge. Sometimes I go to Baton Rouge twice a day. Going to this office, how do I get this money? What do I do? How do I look at this budget? Again, I thank all of my professors for that I knew how to read a governmental budget. And I knew what needed to be done if we needed to change this line item. And was this an allowable cost? Was that allowable? So you had to go through all that to make that work. And that was my 18-hour days.
Yeah.
But every now and then, a grant would come through. But we were able to do this, and we were very frugal with the funds. So the budget was getting better and better, and we were having a surplus. So we was able to buy this big piece of equipment. And we was the city vehicles, oh, my goodness, they were all coming from surplus that they paid maybe $500 for.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So they couldn't even get to where they needed to go for me to keep the promise that I made to fix a ditch. So now we bought 17 new, brand new vehicles, and they're red and with lights. So you know when you see a red truck coming, that's the city of Ville Platte. And in fact, tonight, the day we are doing this interview, I will be paying off those 17 vehicles. Tonight, the day we are doing this interview, big, large equipment, I will be paying that off. We had bonds. Those bonds are paid out. I'll be paying that tonight. We will be a debt-free city.
You went from, you describe it, in the ditch.
In the ditch.
And finances not good, tax base going down.
Right.
People, you talk about your police department not being very well paid.
Right.
So you're able to elevate things,
yes.
Get new vehicles and
yes.
And now
new vehicles, no large debt. Equipment. Now we're debt free. Thank you, Jesus.
No debt at all.
No debt at all.
Wow.
Thank you, Jesus. You know, it didn't happen overnight, but I knew. You know, you just got to press on, and we kept on, and we kept on, and, you know, looking at that budget, and first just reorganized the whole physical way City Hall was done.
Yeah.
And we were frugal. We put in purchase order systems where before, when I got here, you could just go to any store in the city, buy something, say, charge it to the city. No authorization, you know, no nothing. So, oh, my God, we got all these bills. Who authorized that? Well, no, we just go to this store. We say it's for the city. So therefore, I put in an inventory process. Everybody needs a purchase order. Got to be signed, approved. Everybody gets their own budget. And you can spend it, but if it's no more, it's no more.
Right.
You have to wait till next fiscal year. And in the meantime, we were doing what we needed to do accounting-wise and for spending. And we spent what we had to. If something had to wait till the next month, it waited. And then at the same time, we were putting in reserve. You know, you spend a little, but you need to save a lot,
right.
Kind of thing. And I just kind of learned that from church. You know, you pay your tithes. We always paid our tithes. You pay that first, you know. So we paid ourselves. We paid the city first in our reserve. So therefore, we was building up our reserve while we were still maintaining. But eventually, that's how we got surpluses. And we had surpluses every year. But now, of course, we had little challenges along the ways. Hurricanes. We had back-to-back hurricanes, 6 weeks apart. Flooding. And then we had a tornado come through here in April. I've been here all my life, never had a tornado came.
You're okay, used to so hurricanes, but tornado was new, huh?
Yeah, we were used to hurricanes. And then here comes COVID. 2 years, we could do nothing. Nothing. It stifled us. Now that COVID and so many things happened in between, I came up the ranks in LMA. So I was privy to a lot of programs, a lot of money that was available to us. And now we're to the point where we're going to be debt free.
Yeah.
It makes me tremble.
You mentioned this, and I was going to bring this up anyway. You're the current. I watched you get sworn in because I was at the in Lafayette at the summer conference for LMA. You're the current LMA president.
Yes.
And historic in nature there. As
thank
the
you,
first
Lord.
Black female
you
in
know,
that position.
That was something.
96 years, I think it is.
The first black woman as president of the LMA in its 96-year history.
What made you want to, because I now understand the process, you're different than the Georgia Municipal Association, that the second vice president, you have to campaign and run for that.
Yes.
There's a little bit of a nominating process.
Yes.
I know every municipal association is different.
They have to nominate you,
what
and
made
you
run. What made you want to put yourself out there and run for that? And so talk about the LMA involvement and why all the way to the top.
Again, I didn't put myself in there.
Oh, someone else did. Okay.
Somebody said, Jennifer, you need to get on track, you need to be an LMA officer. You know, again, your mouth, you know, you're not ashamed to talk. You're brave, you're bold, you know, and I'm not. If it's for right, I'll talk and scream and holler all day if for right. And Mayor Harry Lewis, Rayville, nominated me to be on his board when he became president. That's how it started. And it was amazing because Mayor Lewis and I, our basketball, the Bulldogs played his team, Rayville. They were like the best school in the state.
So you got a little rivalry
in
basketball.
Oh, it was big rivalry. Because they were always in our way to state championships. We never could win state because Rayville would beat us.
But he liked you as a mayor.
And did. And remember,
not as a Bulldog, but as a mayor.
He was the coach and the principal.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Wow. But then he took a chance on me. And he took a chance and put me on the board. Because he asked me, and I said, he said, yeah, you need to be on the board. We need your voice. That's how it got started. And then as far as the offices was concerned, you have to be nominated. Then you got to run. You got to make 10 district meetings in 1 month. And you got a campaign. Yeah. And people got to vote for you at the annual meeting. And that went on. And that's where I am today.
How many candidates were there the year you had to get
first up? Was always had two. It was always two of us. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. So I won every race. I won every race then.
Well, talk about because if you've been very involved and then you got kind of pulled into higher involvement, it sounds like. But just for the audience, that because I have to explain what GMA does in Georgia and the amount of resources that it provides to municipalities all across the state.
Oh, my God, yes.
And for me, at least in Georgia, I bet you're going to say the same thing for Louisiana. It's all that much more necessary for smaller towns because we don't have the same amount of staff and the resources. That could.
Correct.
So having them with technical assistance, with information, with, you know, just all those resources. So speak to that just a bit there about what LMA and your involvement with LMA has allowed you to be able to do for Ville Platte.
Yeah, again, same song, different verse. And that was one of the reasons that I said yes. Because I needed a seat at the table for small municipalities. That has always been my platform, is fighting for small municipalities, fighting for the cities and the towns and the villages, the ones, the populations like Mound, 19, or you got other ones in North Louisiana, you know, 200 or 300 people. Those people matter to me just as much as the people in New Orleans and Baton Rouge, because that's where all the money always went. New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Shreveport, Alexandria, it went all around us. And so that's the main reason I stuck there and was very, very vocal with every governor then. Then we would go to Washington, D.C., and I was very vocal there. I'm just lucky they didn't arrest me, seriously. And that's one of the reasons I love U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy today. It was his first term. My first trip to D.C., oh, and I'm hot. I'm mad because we have no money, money going everywhere. But over here, it was about five of us in the office from the executive committee meeting with him. And he was sitting there, and I just went off. We never get any money. Y'all always talking about this kind of money. When it comes down to us, it's never any money, blah, blah, blah. And it was like Jimmy Williams was in the corner praying, like, Lord, we're in the United States Senator's office. We're going to get arrested. Mike Schaff was like, you're talking to a United States Senator. Harry Lewis was like, it's too late. Y'all ain't going to stop her now. Y'all might as well let her finish. So I went on, and God bless him, Senator Cassidy. And I guess my voice travels, and it was loud. So one of his people came at the door, and he just raised his hand and said, and he just listened. He just listened. And we don't know how to get in touch with y'all. And the only time y'all come to small towns is when y'all want to have a photo op with us. And then we never get any money. And I went on and on and on. And how do we know? Before the meeting was over, I not only had his cell phone. He like, here's my phone. He said, take the phone. I guess he said, let me just be quiet and listen to this crazy lady. Maybe she might shut up. But from then on, we've had the greatest of friendships. And I have nothing but great things to say about him because he looked out for everybody. And again, it's not black-white. White senator, black mayor. Republican senator, Democratic mayor. I don't look at that. That's the reason you saw United States Senator Bill Cassidy at my swearing-in banquet.
Yeah.
Because of that friendship that started way 12 years ago with him and him listening and him caring about the small municipalities and not just the large municipalities.
Yeah.
And it was so, I guess it was historic at the banquet because I wanted the people to see the swearing-in banquet. I had a white Republican senator to my left. I had a black Republican U.S. Congressman Democrat to my right, and I was sitting in the middle. And that was by design, to show the people how we can come and work together if we just sit down and talk.
Yeah.
Just got to sit down and talk about what's bothering us. We need to know where you're coming from, and you find out where the other person is coming from. And I say this all the time, and people say I shouldn't, but I will sit down with anybody. I will sit down with the Ku Klux Klan and talk. Because I want to know why is it about my skin color just bothers you, you know? And I want you to come from me. It'll be kind of like a Jennifer and Mr. Joe conversation the first year that I ran. I do believe if you just sit down and talk, you can find out that we're more alike than we are different.
Yeah.
And we all got different stories.
We have gotten to hear a lot of your story, but I want to do a little segment here where we get to know you. I've got four questions that'll be fun for us all.
Okay.
Because I'm actually anticipating some good stories, so please don't disappoint. First question of the four, do you now have or have you ever had a nickname?
Jenny. That's the closest they got.
All that mouth getting you in trouble, you never got a nickname other than Jenny? Come on now.
No, they would say mouthpiece.
That's
if you want
what
a mouthpiece, that's what you wanted. Yeah, you
Jenny,
got it.
Jenny the mouthpiece.
Yes, she's the mouthpiece. Y'all want something said, call her.
All right. That's the nickname. All right, next question. What would be your go-to karaoke song?
Oh. Oh, wow. Those are so many.
Got to go with one.
I have to go.
This is good. Most people have trouble coming up with one.
No.
You're having trouble narrowing it down to one.
Yes.
Love it.
Gladys Knight and the Pip.
Okay.
Gladys Knight did a song called Got to Use My Imagination to Keep On Keeping On. She was talking about a man or whatever, but it was like to keep on keeping on, to keep on pressing on because you're stronger than that and you're strong. And another one, I got just one. You know, when Helen Reddy did I Am Woman, and I got that other one that talked about She's on Fire, and just things
so
like
you,
that.
So you're pretty much just going to occupy the karaoke. You keep everyone entertained.
Oh, yeah. You put anything just, on, I'm there.
We're going to put in a whole set list.
Exactly.
For you.
You know, those kind of songs that talk about strength and keep on keeping on, don't give up and press on. Those are my type songs.
All right. You got several there.
That's, yeah,
you might be the first person who's given me several on the karaoke song. Like I said, usually we have to work on one. All right. Third question. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish? And you talk about food so much.
Come on.
You got it. I just need one.
I'm from Ville Platte. You want one?
You can name a plate, and it can have a couple things on it. But that's why I say favorite meal or favorite specific dish.
When I was a child, my grandmother, she wasn't vocal, but when I get my report card, and she understood that A's were a good thing, you know. So her way of rewarding me, she would cook smothered Irish potatoes. Around here, we'd say Irish potatoes, but it's Irish potatoes in a black skillet. That was
your favorite
meal as a child. Also, every Saturday, we had vegetable homemade soup from her garden and liver and onions. I love that. And then she's not just one.
I thought we were good with the Irish potatoes.
The Irish potatoes, not Irish, y'all. Irish. And okra and rice and an okra gumbo. I used to literally, and I still today, I can cut okra. I'm fast, too, because I have to cut.
You got practice.
Yes, because, you know, a lot of people back then didn't have any money, so they would pay my grandfather with vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Okra, and I can chuck some corn, too. I'm good at that, too, man. I'm good. Because that was like, and shell some purple hull peas. I'm good at that as well. So, but I love the okra and okra gumbo. And my grandmother, sweet potato pies.
Man, you got the whole, you got a five course meal.
Exactly. Just laid out for. So this is real bad. You can't have one. Then there's always our famous sauce pecan.
So you keep, I gotta stop you. You keep going. Now. You're giving me too many favorites.
I know.
All right, final question. If you could attend the concert of any singer, duo, perform any band, perform any kind of performer of any kind, whose concert would you want to attend? Whether they are now dead or alive.
Oh.
Whose concert would you want to attend?
Oh.
Yeah, I hit you with that one.
The OJs.
Okay.
Because I went to one of their concerts.
I thought you were going to say Gladys Knight and the Pips.
But when Eddie LaVert, the OJs would get so, they would sweat through their suits. And Eddie LaVert would just sing. It was just three of them. He would sing and he would sing. He would fall on the floor and sing. And you were in there. You were clapping and crying at the same time. Now, especially if your heart had just got broken, you know. And they sang about love and family reunion. There's songs like Family Reunion and Let Me Make Love to You and Brandy and all of those songs. Because they back then singers sang from their heart. And they were singing. It wasn't machines that making them have a voice or whatever. Then Aretha Franklin. I can't have one.
Yeah, OJs.
OJs. Aretha Franklin, Gladys Knight, Patti LaBelle.
You want a whole music. Yeah. You want a whole series.
I love Helen Reddy. I love Captain Antoniel. I love Blake Shelton.
Like a lot of music.
Yes, I like a lot of music.
I'm sticking with OJ. Blake. OJ's your answer. You did that one so much more passionately than you just listed.
Oh, man.
Stuff.
Yeah, but I like the country songs, too. Like, I love Blake Shelton. I love him. I like Old Dominion, especially that song they got out now. I was on a boat that day. I love that.
You answered all these so well, we got to know you even better. Thanks for letting us get to know you.
I love Luke. I love all of them, really. I was in the band. And so we just had a great appreciation, Mr. K, from all types of music.
Yeah.
So I grew up loving all types. Black people music, white people music, country, rhythm. Now I love the blues, B.B. King and Bobby Blaine. Oh! My. Mm.
We really got to know you on this. Thank you.
I'm serious. I love the blues.
Small Town Podcast is supported by the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. If you are seeking a vibrant community with great entertainment, recreational opportunities, a low cost of living, and a strong local economy, then you should check out the City of Douglas and Coffee County, Georgia. Visit coffeegachamber.com to find out why the Douglas Coffee County community is a great place to visit and an even better place to call home. Irwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital production and marketing for small businesses that help small towns survive and thrive. In today's global and very digital world, your digital presence is just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Irwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications. From website creation and maintenance, social media management, email lists and newsletters, digital content creation, including audio and video production, and making sure that all of these things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and county lines, so you can focus on keeping your small town community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Irwinomics can help guide you in growing your business, go to Irwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Irwinomics, helping small town business thrive.
Well, we've talked a lot about some of the things that have changed and some of the progress you've made. But for someone who maybe they've heard of Ville Platte and they've just passed by because they didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are just finding out about Ville Platte, Louisiana for the first time. So let's talk about what they should come. What would you want someone to come participate in, whether it was a particular festival to take part in, any kind of historic sites that they should visit? So what do you want to make sure that if someone could come to Ville Platte for one day, what would you want to make sure they experienced?
The people. The people. Ville Platte is about the people, the people, the people. We literally have the friendliest people in the world. The minute you meet anybody on the street, hello, how you doing? Everybody sits on the porch and they'll wave at you, hey, like they've known you all their lives. But we also have We are host to the Cotton Festival in October. We are the smoked meat capital of the world.
Wow.
And that's documented.
Where is that documented?
In the state legislature.
Oh, you got a resolution passed.
We got a resolution passed. We are the swamp pop music capital of the world. That's also documented.
I don't even know if I know what swamp pop is.
Swamp pop is the music from the 50s and 60s. Cherry Pie.
Okay.
Matilda, I Cry and Cry for You. All of those.
That's Swamp Pop.
That's
okay.
Swamp Pop. Every February, the Monday before Mardi Gras, people from all over the nation and the world come, because some of these singers, they've gotten older, but they still come and perform live.
But they're still singing.
But they still got it. They still got it. Their voices are Warren Storm. He just, you know, passed away. And all of those guys, we have about 15 of them. But people from the Netherlands, from Japan. I mean, they from France, all over Europe. They come for that one night to hear those guys perform Swamp Pop music.
That's fun.
It's amazing. The Civic Center is packed tight. We got a, and I go every year.
Oh, you guys have a Civic Center here? Small town with
a
Civic Center.
We got a brand new, that's correct. And, you know, 600 people can get in there.
Okay.
And it's packed tight. We have to turn people away.
Yeah.
And when I go and do my mayor thing, but I go into the audience and talk about where are you from and this and that. I always give a basket of all our seasonings made here. That's another topic to them. But it amazes
me. Yeah, you've been talking about food, so we're definitely get to the food people can experience.
So that Swamp Pop thing, and that's the big thing in February, the month is the Monday before Mardi Gras. That's called Lundi Gras.
Uh-huh.
And then, again, with smoked meat, we also have a smoked meat festival.
Okay. Well, I would expect that.
Well, of course.
If it's going to be documented, I mean, you got to have a festival commemorating it.
And at this smoked meat festival, people compete. Now, everybody in Villeplaque can cook.
Now, what time of year is that one, that festival?
That, well, it used to be in June, but it got too hot.
Too hot for the smoked meat?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
we moved it kind of to the spring, like April or May. It depends upon...
It's already hot. You don't need those cookers.
That's
smokers
correct.
Going. Yeah.
And so everybody competes, and everything you cook, no matter what it is, has to be smoked.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's fish, crawfish, steak,
well, that sounds
fair.
It's called
whatever.
A smoked meat festival.
And there are different levels, and you have, oh my God, you may have... That is the hardest thing. You might have 150 entries.
Wow.
That is one contest I do not judge.
I was going to say, that'd be difficult to judge.
No, it's hard. Because you'll have a seafood category, you have a wild game category. And so that's
you probably
just
need to have judges just for this category,
exactly.
Not for the whole thing.
Oh, no. You got to have a round of judges.
Woo.
And then, so there, you know, live bands come there. That's a weekend thing. I mean, that, and you just eat. Then after the judging, the food is just out there, and you can go from booth to booth just eating.
Just sampling everybody's stuff.
Oh, you can just feel your arteries just filling up. And after that, after the smoked meat, we have boucheries here. For those of you who don't know what the boucherie is, that's the killing of a pig, a hog. We do got to do that in the fall, though. But we did have Anthony Bourdain, God bless his soul, here two or three years ago, and he wanted to come, but the only time he could come was in June. Ooh, you know, it's 100 degrees and dealing with pork. All right. But anyway.
So you did it anyway.
Yes, we did it anyway.
It was Anthony Bourdain.
Oh,
so yeah.
My God. And Anthony came. He had the best time participating. Of course, he was a butcher and he knew. But just, and I'm there cleaning that pig, scraping him up, putting him in the house, making the, I knew how to do that because I did that with my grandfather. And so it wasn't my first rodeo. And so, you know, I every mayor usually give a guest a key to the city. I gave him a hog head.
That was different.
Oh, he loved it. He loved
memorable,
it.
I'm sure.
Oh, my God. He loved it. He told his crew, when can we move here so I can vote for her? You know, this is the first time I got a hog head. And he tasted our food because I'm like, you got to start at 5:30 in the morning while it's kind of cool in June. And they would, I'm like, Anthony, you got to push him along. He's going to get hot after a while. We need to get this pork. And he moved it along and he moved it along. And one of the jokes, and he was a pretty good social drinker because around here, you don't cook if you don't drink. You understand? You have to drink to wait for the food because you one of the I guess the key to our food is we cook it very slow.
Mm-hmm.
So the flavors can just marinate. So but while you're waiting for it to cook, you gotta drink, you understand? So I told him, I said, now Anthony, let me explain this to you. When you see these guys open a gallon of whiskey and they throw away the top, that means they're going to finish this by the end of the day.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah, they don't need the cap.
They don't need the cap anymore. Yeah. He said, you're kidding me. I said, oh, no, no. So please don't try to keep up with them. You do what you do. You understand? That didn't go. He didn't listen very well.
No, he decided to try.
Yeah. Oh.
You challenged him.
Oh, he did. But everybody cooking in black pots, and he found out the way we clean a black pot. Because when you're almost at the end and there's something left, that same slice of bread. Take that one slice of bread and you go all around that pot. Then you eat. That's how you clean it. And then you start cooking all over again. You know, and he was like, oh, my God. And then when he tastes it, we call it a freak. I say it's a brown gravy with fresh pork. He's like, Mayor, you got to excuse me, but I just need to cuss. That's how good this is. I just need to. He didn't say curse. I just need to cuss. Because that's how good this is. So he did a. So Anthony Bourdain been here. And that following year, he was supposed to come back and judge the Smoked Meat Festival.
Yeah.
But that's the day that he was gone, that he passed away. So he loved our food. I mean, it's just not me about our food. Our food is really good. I even got, when Mitch Landrieu was mayor of New Orleans, I even got Mitch to admit that Bill Platt food was better than New Orleans. I did.
Was that on a recording?
We were at a gathering. He came here for something. I'm like, Mitch, come on. Now, you know. And he's like, yeah, it is. I mean, I know.
I hope he didn't tell you not to tell anybody. He said,
I love my New Orleans food.
You know we're recording this.
He said, I love my New Orleans food. I'm born here. He said, New Orleans is good. And it is good. I love New Orleans food, too. But it's just something about that Bill Platt food. Again, so slow, marinated. And people here, they cook with so much love and passion. You see, like every man in Bill Platt knows how to cook. Every man. And it's like a rite of passage because they teach their children and their grandchildren. Because we're always cooking in the backyard, too. It's always outside cooking in that cast iron pot. I still have the cast iron pots from my grandparents. So it's that kind of food, again, and you look in that community. Because every Thursday night in Ville Platte, you will find a gathering of men in what we call an outdoor kitchen. Because everybody builds a kitchen in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what y'all call it in the city, but what? We call it outdoor kitchen.
Yeah.
They go makes sense. And they gather.
It's every, a kitchen outdoors. Outdoor
every
kitchen.
every Thursday night, and the women are in the inside. Again, community coming together. And they cook. And they drink.
Yeah.
For those who drink. If you don't drink, you don't drink. But you eat. And those things like that. But it's the community of Ville Platte that, and then we have such a vast amount of land that's available here. You can come to Ville Platte and live very well. And especially now with internet. But you can buy acres and acres, you know, and build you a very, very comfortable place or a business. And it's quiet and it'd be so quiet. And then again, enjoy the people. And then now you can come from New York and come to Ville Platte. Because now, in the next 2 months, we will have fiber. Fiber in the next.
So you're inviting all the remote workers from across the country to come live?
I am telling you.
You'll gain weight from all the food, but you will live well.
You'll gain weight from all the food, plus you can still work, and you'll have a lot of great people that are around you that you can really call friends and neighbors. Because before, we didn't have internet. We were the fifth slowest city in the nation with internet. Now we have gone from worst to first. You hear me? We're going to have fiber to every home. During COVID, it was a nightmare. I didn't sleep for 2 years because internet was going down. They couldn't do homework. Businesses couldn't do business. Oh, it was crazy. And so now got a grant. The vice president came down and awarded Evangeline Parish of Ville Platte. $8 million will be spent in Ville Platte, fiber to every home and every business. Thank you, Jesus. Worst to first.
Well, Mayor, as we start to kind of wrap up this episode on Ville Platte, I want to give you the same opportunity I've given to all of the Small Town Podcast guests, let you speak directly to the podcast audience and tell them why they should come visit, have some delicious food, or maybe they should come move to Ville Platte,
they
Louisiana.
Not just have the food. Come and live with us here, because you know what? Another jewel we have. We still have a lot of small businesses, mom and pop stores, second, third, fourth generation, where you can go in and the owner is there whose name is on the building, or the son is there whose name is on the building. We still have butcher shops with actual butchers. You can go in and you can specify how you want that cut of meat, and he's there cutting it for you. Not only will he cut it for you, he will season it for you. And if you got some time, they'll cook it for you as well and tell you just to come pick it up. You understand? Or if you don't know how to cook it, they will walk you through it and talk you through it just right there at the store. The smoked meat is in the backyard. They will take you there. You actually can see all the smoked meat you're buying smoking. That's the most beautiful sight on this world, to see me just smoking. And we had a fabulous, fabulous girls and boys club. We didn't have anything for the young people to do. And this had been on my radar since way before Mayor. When I was at Community Action, I tried to start one. And I didn't have the building or anything. But now we have a summer program, Girls and Boys Club. We have over 100 kids every summer, free of charge. We give them breakfast, lunch, and a snack. It's a structured program where they have activities where they learn. We have a culinary program. They learn how to be chefs. They have their own uniforms. A chef literally comes there and teaches them. They get certified. We have a video program where they learn technology. I have people coming in. I have an astronaut in training. She's 21 years old. She's going to walk on Mars one day. She comes to talk to them and let them know you can be an engineer. We have bankers who come in. We have football players. Devery Henderson, the former Saints great. In that football game with Kentucky, and he caught that ball 2 seconds. I almost had a heart attack, but we won. Kevin Falk comes there. We have a lot of, I bring all these kids, these people here to talk to our kids, and also a STEM academy. We have a STEM academy. Now they're learning about science, technology, engineering, math. Before, they all wanted to be basketball and football players. Now they want to be engineers. Now they know how the water system in the city works. They're being taught this for free. For free. And then you'll have bankers and come there and tell them how to invest their money, what's a checking account, how to save money. So we teach them all kinds of life skills. We even teach them how to be gentlemen. We teach the little boys how to open the doors for their moms. And they're like, I got to do for my sister too? I say, yeah, for you. She's a girl? Yes, but she don't need to be opening no door for her. I don't need to be opening no door. But anyway, we teach them how to be gentlemen. We teach them etiquette. We teach them how to set the table. All of the life skills comes out of that girls and boys place. So there are things like that you'll have. And one of the great things about Ville Platte, why you should move here, you still have grandmothers and grandfathers. We call them mamas and papas. But I call the little children shy babies. That's a term of endearment for kids. You somebody say, oh, shy. That means they like you, you know. So you can go to work, and then you have a built-in babysitter because you got the grandmas and the grandpas right there who will keep the kids all day long. One of the jewels here, an example, at City Hall or anywhere in town, you can work and your mom or your grandmother are going to call you and say, I cooked some okra and rice and chicken today for lunch. You can go home and have lunch with your grandmama. You can go home and have lunch with your elderly parents and still make it back to work. That's one of the greatest advantages of small towns. You can't, that's priceless. Because I used to do it, pop a call and like, oh, she cooked some okra and rice today because he knew that was my favorite. I could go home for lunch, eat the okra and rice, have a nap, because, you know, after you eat that, you and come back to work. In an hour, you can do all that. But it's more or less the camaraderie that you build and having lunch with your grandmother and your grandfather, your elderly mom and your dad, and at the same time, you can check on them, and then you can go back to work. You know how productive that is? And you know how good that can make you feel? So it's little things like that you get in a small town that you don't get in the big city. It takes you 2 hours to go 3 blocks in New York City, you know? Where here, you 2 hours, you're almost in another state in Louisiana. But those are the jewels of a small town. So I would say y'all just need to come to Ville Platte. Y'all come. We will welcome you. We will love you. And I promise you, the quality of living here will be, and it is great mentally, because, you know, people here, whew, we got people 104, 105 that, you know, they're still living because the quality of life is good and the stress level is down. We don't have any traffic. Traffic to us, if we got to stop at that red light, that's traffic. Other than that, you can be anywhere you want in 5 or 6 minutes. You're good. You know, there are great football games at each of the schools, and there's a Tea Cotton Bowl that is national because it's a black school against a white school, a private school against a public school, and we've been on ESPN. That's the biggest, 4,000 people at that game. So we got certain events that we look to. We're a very religious community. We got 38 churches in Ville Platte. So whatever your religious denomination is, we got a church for you, I promise you. You know, whatever you believe in, we got a church for you. So it's things like that that make us special. But if I had to, one word, well, three words, people, people, people. And food, food, food.
Two words, three times.
There you go. There you go.
Well, Mayor Jennifer Vedrine, thank you so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Thank you so much. And I had a great time. So y'all come to Ville Platte. Woo!
All right. Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Jennifer Vedrine for talking with me. I also want to thank the Louisiana Municipal Association and Louisiana Economic Development for partnering and sponsoring this episode. As always, I want to thank our season sponsors, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority, and the Greater Harrelson Chamber. Thank you all for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.